I'm speaking with Eric Haas, an independent filmmaker, writer, musician, and environmental expert. He's just published a novel called Apocalypse Near, and he goes by the name E, as in Edward. Okay, thanks for joining us today, E. I understand that a few years ago you suffered an aneurysm and almost died. What happened?
Well, I was actually driving to pick up my girlfriend to go see a play, and had an ice cream headache times a million overtake me. And my undergraduate training is in psychiatry, so I knew what was happening as it continued to go on. I was like, wow, I'm having a bleed. So if I don't finish driving these last couple blocks to her house, I'm going to die right beside the road here. So I got to her place, knocked on the door, told her what was going on, and went and laid down in her front lawn because I was at peace and quite ready to go. I knew if they got me to a hospital, what they were going to do.
Well, let me ask you, before you tell us about the hospital, and I definitely want to hear about that, I mean, I've seen a picture of you. You're a young guy, it looks like. And
yeah.
What in the world would cause a young guy like you to have an aneurysm?
Actually, a pre-existing, very extremely rare condition, call it fate, known as an AVM. There was a senator, actually, from one of the western states that had one last year. And it's a little cluster of blood vessels in your brain that has no capillaries between them. And you can have one your whole life, never know it. They usually only find them in autopsies because they have a 98%, over 98% chance of killing you, or even a higher percentage of leaving you, you know, a vegetable.
My goodness. Okay, E, you were lying down in your girlfriend's front lawn. You were having this aneurysm, and they took you to the hospital. What happened then?
Well, I was conscious through the whole thing. I told her, you know, don't take me to the hospital. Leave me here. I'm just going to go right up into that star. And women don't listen to me. So she drove me to an emergency room. They took some MRIs of my head, saw I was bleeding out. There just happened to be a brain surgeon there. They got me, got permission from my father. I pulled my cell phone out of my pocket and told him I most likely wouldn't survive the operation. Be better if I didn't, because I'd probably be a vegetable because I had bled out so much. But my brain shifted to one side. So they got me in an operating room, and they were in my head for almost 7 hours.
Good luck.
And I witnessed a lot of this.
What do you mean you witnessed it?
I was out of my body looking down, seeing my scalp peeled back and a big chunk of my skull taken out, and watching them work on my brain the whole time, saying to myself, I told her not to bring me to the hospital, you know, now what?
So here you are, you're floating out of your body, I assume, your consciousness is, and you're looking down. I mean, what is that like? Can you describe that?
Extremely alienating. like a dreamlike quality to it, yet so extreme, more intense than anything I experienced, so more real. Like when I reflect on it, you know, now I know what post-traumatic stress syndrome to a soldier might be, because I can take me right back there, you know, scrutinizing the scene. And but a feeling more, as time went on, I was feeling more comfortable being out of my body, and quite frankly did not want to get back into it. I feel like I was sucked back into it by the surgeons working on me. And also, like, you don't have a choice. I learned about this life-death thing.
You don't. How did you learn that?
You kind of come here when you're put here, and you get taken out when you're taken out, because I didn't have, like, a will to stay out of my body, because my will was to stay out of my body because I was getting more comfortable with getting further and further away from it.
So it was like you were perfectly happy where you were in this out-of-body situation, and didn't look like it was going to be a whole lot of fun to be back in it. Is that it?
Yeah, my body was a mangled wreck on a table, and I was, you know, conscious in this, like, what I call my light body, where I was free from physical density and moving at the speed of thought.
Well, did you meet any other beings or anything while you were outside your body? Did you see the tunnel? Did you see the light? Did you get all those things you hear about when people have a near-death experience?
Yes, I saw the light, actually, while I was lying in her front lawn. I was looking up at the stars, and I felt like I was going up into this one particular star, and that's why I just wanted to keep going. That's why I just wanted to lay there. But she dragged me into the car. My left side had shut down at this point because I was bleeding out into my right hemisphere.
And
so I couldn't move even if I wanted to. And I wanted to keep going there, but, you know, the trauma of being dragged into a car and then being, you know, brought into the coldness of a hospital with all these technicians working on me was, that was the frightening part.
Did you, by the way, everybody, I'm speaking with E. His book is called Apocalypse Near, and we're going to find out about that in a minute. But did any beings come to you and talk to you and explain to you that you didn't have a choice, that you had to go back, or how did that work?
Everything was more in, like, I was hearing with my mind's ear, seeing with my mind's eye. So I was getting this feeling of total peace come over me. And at one point, as I said, I was getting more comfortable getting out of my body. I found I was, like, looking back at planet Earth, and I watched it turn from the blue-green planet we know to, like, a dead moon-like apparition in an instant. And I was like, what was that? It was very surreal, kind of cartoony look to it. And then I was turned around, and I saw the Earth, like, healthier than it is today. And the message that I got, not, like, in words, I wasn't actually hearing speech, I was, like, getting, like, kind of uploaded with it. Like, the only way I can describe it is hearing with my mind's ear, and the message I got was, you're going to see one of these two things happen in your lifetime. You know, the planet will die of consumption, or you're going to see the humans get it and turn it around. And you're going back there, and you're going to see one of these two things happen. So, as I was put back into my body, again, against my will, I was coming out of the surgery, and that's when I got into into a very deep coma. But I was still conscious. I was hearing the nurses in the room say, yeah, this guy, he's a lock to be a lock-in. You know, he'll be probably conscious in there, but, you know, deaf, dumb, blind, paralyzed, kind of buried alive in his body. And that fear kind of woke me up. I, like, out of my coma, I consciously remembered screaming, I'm here, I'm here. And just hours after a surgery that I was never supposed to wake up from, and if I lived through, not be able to ever do anything again, I jumped up in my hospital, like, got up out of the hospital bed, pulled out my breathing tube, pulled out all the IVs, turned to the nurses and said DNR, and asked for my laptop.
DNR? What's DNR?
Yeah, though, do not resuscitate me. Oh. I do not want to be intubated. If I'm going to die, you let my body go. I told them I'm conscious, I'm lucid, and I set off every alarm in the ICU doing this, pulling out my breathing tube, and so, you know, I had doctors rushing in telling me, you don't understand what happened to you, and I'm like, no, I do. And I asked my girlfriend for my laptop, and from the time I got out of the hospital and I was in assisted living, I started uploading, I created the website consciousconsumers.net, and I was just trying to show people what we can do to stop this planet from dying of consumption in a very logical manner, because a lot of the other things I got while I was dead was all these social calculus equations, like what we can do to turn it around. And that's what that website's about. And I spent my first year after the surgery just working on that website. And I felt like I'm not getting the message out there fast enough. You know, this isn't working. People aren't responding to this logic. I didn't tell anybody about seeing the planet die because I didn't want to raise suspicions about my sanity.
Well, I want to ask you about that, but let me say that we're speaking with Eric Haas, who goes by E. He's written a book called Apocalypse Near. Let me be sure I understand what you're saying here, E. You had the out-of-body experience while you were in surgery. They were working on your brain. They had your skull cut open, your scalp pulled back. It was pretty ghastly looking. You felt pretty good out there. And then you had this vision. It had to be more like a hallucination or a vision than something that actually happened.
Yes.
But what you saw was the Earth turn brown and like it was dead.
Or like exactly looked like the moon, just gray, white, completely dead.
And then another vision of it turning blue-green again and being, you know,
it was kind of in another direction. I saw the possibility where we got it, and the plan was more biologically active, and we learned to live in a symbiotic nature with the life forces of the planet.
And so what you feel that was a message that was given to you that this is a choice that mankind has between these two alternatives, killing off the Earth with our pollution and so forth, or living in harmony with it, getting it right. Is that it?
Yes, because we already have the technology to do that. We're just not making those choices.
Okay, and so you have taken it upon yourself and feel that you were given this mission to get the word out. Is that it?
Yeah.
And you've created a website to do that, and you've written a book.
Yeah, well, the book came out of I felt like I wasn't able to reach enough people with the website. They weren't responding to the logic, so I thought, well, what would work? What do humans respond to? And they respond to stories more than logic, it seems, because, you know, we've been getting this message about the environment for over 40 years now,
right,
saying, you know, greenhouse effect is going to happen if we continue to burn fossil fuels at this rate. And exactly what these scientists said would happen is happening, but people aren't changing. So the book, I kind of came out of, I got to a point where I was suicidal, and I was like, this isn't working, nobody's listening. And a little voice told me, you know what, you're trying to do something for real, you're a filmmaker, why don't you write a movie about it instead and do it virtually? And 2 weeks later, I had a script, a feature-length script in front of me, and the book came out of the script. I spent a year trying to raise the money to do the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a case of automatic writing, because it just came out, this kind of epic conflict to inspire people to, you know, how to behave the way the ancient Greeks and Romans used to use stage plays and drama to show their populations. This is how you behave morally in these cities that we've built, and if you don't, the gods are going to hit you with a lightning bolt or do some other horrible thing to you. So it's kind of a frightening story to scare people into environmentalism.
Are you still looking for funding for this film?
Yeah, I put a lot of the screenplay up on my website, and the book is actually just to get the story out there, to get people reading it, because anybody can read a book. Not everybody can enjoy reading a screenplay.
Well, that's certainly an important message and a good one that you're trying to get out there. But I mean, about your illness here, you were in the ICU, you actually came to long before anybody thought you ever would, or that you may not ever come to, but you did. You regained consciousness. Didn't you have, what were the effects? Did you have amnesia? What was going on?
Yes, I woke up with a very brief, intense amnesia. That's the other reason I go by E, is I couldn't remember who I was, what, you know, and this is as I was coming out of, like, waking up out of the coma. There's a, you know, I don't know if you've ever slept in a new place and you'll wake up and be like, where am I?
Right.
Well, I had that about everything, including who I was. It was very brief, but it was very intense, and I kind of used that in the book.
How long did that last? I mean, you didn't recognize your girlfriend or your parents or anybody?
I didn't recognize myself, like, mentally. On a mental level, I was disassociated from absolutely everything except remembering E, hearing E, hearing the sound. And then it came together rather quickly, but I still have these moments where I remember that feeling very intensely.
So, very quickly, what are you, a couple weeks or a couple hours? How long?
That was just a matter of minutes, really. But the long-term effects from the surgery physically are I'm pretty close to legally blind.
Uh-huh.
I lost the part of my brain where the aneurysm was in my occipital, so I lost my peripheral vision. I only see what I'm looking at directly. I'm epileptic. I have to be on an anti-seizure medication probably for the rest of my life.
I see.
And have a pain condition, a nerve pain condition. But all in all, with how I'm supposed to be, according to medical science and my MRIs, I'm like way beyond what they thought I would be.
Right. Now, in your book and your writings and your website and so forth, you say you can that we can raise our standard of living and help the environment at the same time. How do we do that, E?
Well, the technologies to do that already exist. Particularly, you know, if we threw our weight, our R&D money into continuing to develop the hydrogen fuel cell, which was invented by NASA in the 60s, you know, that alone could, you know, raise our standard of living, because it's, you know, its only exhaust is water vapor. And I live in Tampa, where, you know, we live under threat of hurricanes for a big part of the year. And there, you can have a fuel cell system in your home at this point. I mean, they're not good for powering cars because, you know, the Hindenburg, you know, it's flammable, and they haven't solved that storage tank problem. But every home in the United States could be powered by a fuel cell.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then when the lights go out in a storm, you're still watching television and your refrigerator stays cold, you know?
Yeah, that would be nice.
So it's a better way to do it. It's a cleaner way, but we're still trying to make the, you know, the internal combustion engine run clean, which is impossible.
Right, it's not going to do that.
It exhausts poison.
Yeah, carbon monoxide.
It's, you know, 100 years plus old technology. Why are we bothering? Because powers that be want to keep it that way because certain people are making a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
They'd rather not change.
I'm sure that's true. We've been speaking with Eric Haas, who goes by E, an independent filmmaker, writer, musician. He's become an environmental expert, and he's got a novel out called Apocalypse Near. E, what is your website so that people can go and visit and find out more and perhaps buy your novel and so forth?
Yeah, www.consciousconsumers.net. And I'll give away 10 free books to people that go there and just send me an email and mention your show. And I'll send you a free interactive copy of the book, because that's the other thing about this book. It's interactive. It's the best way to read it is online, because it interacts with the web space and all this other art and media, because the idea is reformance art, what I call reformance art. Get the society to reform itself.
Yes,
and the book is an epic adventure that shows how we can do that and entertain people while doing it. I call it ecotainment.
Ecotainment, that's good. Okay, so that website is www.consciousconsumer.net.
Yeah, consciousconsumers.net.
So it's plural, consciousconsumers.net, consciousconsumers.net. Well, what message would you like to leave with our listeners today, E?
E equals C squared. Environmentalism equals conscious consumption. It's not up to the government. It's not up to corporations. It's up to all of us. We can fix it.
That sounds great. Thanks so much. It's been interesting talking with you, and I appreciate you being on the show today, E.
Thanks, Mr. Martin.